I want to share with you four things this morning, 4 points. And I'm going to give you the 4 points, and then I'm going to elaborate. The 4 points that I want to make are, first of all, evangelism and missions. And I really don't know how to separate these. They're so interwoven, so I'll use them interchangeably this morning. Evangelism or mission is a way of life. It isn't something that is tacked on to other things that we do, but it's a way of life. And I am so grateful for the new term that we're using, lifestyle evangelism. Secondly, this evangelism grows out of abiding with Christ, as we're taught in John 15, that we cannot cannot really bear fruit unless we are a part of the branch. Third, witness training helps Christians to build confidence in witnessing. And fourth, we do it together. I believe so strongly what Paul teaches, that somebody plows the field, somebody else plants, somebody else waters, but that it's God who gives the increase. I think in all of my experiences as a Christian, the most important truth I've learned since becoming a Christian is that witness is simply sharing our faith in the power of the Holy Spirit and leaving the results to God. And once I discovered that to be the truth, I realized that the burden was really not on me anymore, that it really was not my responsibility to win people to Christ, that is the responsibility of God himself. All that he asked me to do is to be the vehicle or the instrument through which a person hears about Christ. As I grew up in that little church in South Florida, I mentioned yesterday some of the people who influenced my life a great deal. I want to mention another person today, and that person was my Sunbeam band leader. When I was a Sunbeam, there were 4 facts that were taught to us, I suppose, beginning at the age of 3. And those facts were elaborated as we grew older, but they were essentially this. First of all, Jesus loved me. Secondly, Jesus loved all of the children of the world. Third, some children do not know this. And fourth, Jesus wants me to tell those children. And sometime before I first began school, before I was in the first grade, I had ingrown or inbred into my life these 4 facts, and I became a witness or an evangelist or a missionary at the time that I was a Sunbeam. Then it was in training union, and I seemed to be harping on training union because it was really one of the outstanding factors that influenced my life as I grew up. But as I went to training union, as I participated as a young person in training union, it was there that I learned how to handle the Bible. I learned how to locate scripture, and I learned the verses that could be used as I shared with my friends in school what Christ meant to me. And then continually, my parents set for me in our family the example of witnessing. I don't suppose Frostproof ever had a new family to move in that they were not visited either by my mother or my daddy or both of them to have presented to them an invitation to come to our church and to have a question about what their spiritual relationship with the Lord. As I went to college and taught school, I learned through the work of my church about the importance of planned visitation, knocking on doors to visit people and to talk with them, not only about their relationship to the church, but most important, their relationship to the Lord. It was a natural thing for me to witness. As a college student and as a school teacher, I felt that those pupils who were in my classes had the right to know that I was a Christian. They had the right to choose for themselves whether or not they too should become Christians. I suppose I practiced cultivative evangelism. I felt that I became a friend to them, and then I could share with them the belief that I had in Jesus Christ. When I went to the seminary, I didn't have to make a choice because we were required at New Orleans Seminary to hand out X number of tracts every week. This was not a very comfortable thing for me to do, to stand on the street corner and hand out tracts. And I was glad that eventually I learned that that was not the only way that a Christian could witness and get credit for it. But as I left the seminary, I came into WMU work. And I really had not, my life, as far as I had known, had not been directed toward being a state WMU worker. It was not that I had not thought of it. When it was presented to me, I just said, not that. I was a determined person as far as what I intended to do with my life. And yet the Lord opened the door and said, this is the way, walk ye in it. And I've been very happy in this area of my life. Again, as I found my way through Women's Missionary Union, I found that there were many opportunities. There were many times that witnessing was a natural part of my life. I was teaching a Sunday school class, and I was visiting for the church. But then there came a point in my life, and it happened to me so gradually that I really didn't realize it was happening. There came a period of time in my life when I really was not witnessing. I was not making opportunities nor recognizing opportunities when they presented themselves to share my faith with other people. I really cannot identify the date that this stopped. But I can identify the date when it started again. When I was executive secretary of WMU in Florida, we became quite interested in the new idea among Southern Baptists for lay evangelism schools. And we decided as a state convention that all of us would be trained in lay evangelism schools, that we all would qualify as directors of lay evangelism schools, and that this would be a strategy that we would use in Florida in our efforts to reach people for Christ. Well, I was the only female department head in Florida, and it just seemed natural. Really, I thought, well, they don't really mean me. They mean the preachers who are on our staff. But I really found out that they meant everybody. And so I went with a group of the men on our staff to Atlanta, to one of the pilot schools, one of the pilot lay evangelism schools. On Monday night, in the first session of the lay evangelism school, we filled out that pink sheet that probably many of you have filled out. And one of the questions there, or one of the blanks, said, list three people whom you know well who are not Christians. And suddenly I realized that I did not know three people very well who were not Christians. In fact, I did not know anybody in Jacksonville who was not a Christian. Now, this did not mean that everybody in Jacksonville was a Christian, but it simply meant that my way of life, my way of walking in the city of Jacksonville did not lead me into an acquaintance with people who were not Christians. And so I went way back in my mind to Frostproof, Florida, and I picked up some of those names that we had prayed for years, hoping that eventually they'd come to be Christians. And I listed those three of those names on that little sheet. I went through the experiences of that week, and almost every day before Thursday I prayed, Lord, let me be sick Thursday so I won't have to go visiting. And I'm not ever sick, so that was a very pointless prayer for me to pray. And surely enough, Thursday night I felt like going to the church. I wasn't sick at all. And I got my names and I went knocking on doors in the city of Atlanta to share my faith with the people whose names I had on cards. And really, surely enough, it didn't kill me. You know, I was just as well when I got back. In fact, a little bit more well when I got back from that experience than I had been at the beginning. But I left this entire week's experience with a sincere prayer in my heart that I prayed every day, almost every hour. Lord, please put me in a position, put people in front of me where I will have to witness to them. It was not that I had not been interested in witnessing. This soul-winning visitation has been an important part of community missions in Women's Missionary Union. And then direct evangelism, a part of our mission action task, has been a significant part of what we have been doing. And I suppose that if anybody had asked me if I had been responsible for leading anybody to Christ, I probably would have said, well, no, but you see, I've been training a lot of women. I've been training a lot of women and helping them to understand how important direct evangelism is, and so forth. But anyway, I began to pray, and I said, now, Lord, you know that most of my work is with Christian women, with Baptist women, not just any of them, but the cream of the crop, those that belong to WMU. And you know how unlikely it's going to be that I really will rub shoulders very often with people who are not Christians because of where I go and what I do when I get there. But the Lord began to answer my prayers. In some of the ways that you would never believe, I had opportunities to share my faith. And I want to share just a few of those with you. And I want to share them just as a reminder that God does answer our prayers. And that most of the time He gives us a lot more than we ever ask for. Because I almost now have to shut my eyes if I want to not witness, because He continually presents me with opportunities. The first such opportunity was the very next week. As soon as I got back from Atlanta, I left from Jacksonville to go to Key West to participate in an associational evangelism conference. There was going to be a workshop in the conference for WMU members. I was invited to go early and to have a luncheon with the Baptist women at Key West First Baptist Church, and I did. And when they went home to get ready for the evening meeting in Marathon, I decided that I would see Key West again. So I went on one of the little conch train rides around the little island, and when I got back, I began looking for a place to buy bolos, or for you Spanish-speaking people, boyas. And it seemed that every little place where I could buy them was closed on Monday afternoon. But finally I found a place where in the window was a sign, boyas, 50 cents a dozen. I walked in and sat down on the stool and ordered a dozen boyas. And the little on the stool next to me was a young woman who grinned as she heard me order. And then she said, "Do you know what you ordered?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And she said, "You don't look like a Key Wester." And I said, "I'm not. This is my fifth time to Key West, and it's my fifth time to eat boyas. They're a little tiny piece of bread that looks like a hush puppy. That's one of the best tasting things you can ever imagine." Well, I sat there, and she talked, and I talked, and it took longer and longer for those boyas to fry. And there kept being this urging inside me to talk about something significant. You know, we talked about the weather and all kinds of things that didn't amount to too much. And so finally, I gritted my teeth, and I said, "May I tell you about the most meaningful experience I've ever had?" And she grinned and said, "I'd love to hear it." And so in good lay evangelism style, in 59 seconds, I gave her my testimony. And I said, have you ever had an experience like this?" And she stopped for a minute. She hesitated and she said, "No, I don't think I know I have not." And she said, "I don't think I've ever met anybody else who has ever had this experience." And so I said, "May I tell you more?" And she listened gladly as I told her some of the things I had learned to say just the week before. And then I said to her, "Where are you from?" And she said, "I'm from Key West. I was born here, and I have very seldom left this little island. And as far as I know, I don't know anybody in Key West who is a Christian." And I thought about that group of Baptist women with whom I had had lunch. And I wondered how many of them shopped in the same grocery store with this young woman. How many of them were in the same PTA or did a number of things like she did. And I thought how tragic it was that a woman could grow to adulthood in Key West, Florida, and never meet anyone whom she knew was a Christian. I wish that I could say that I was the one who led her to the point of commitment that day. I was not, but I gave her name to women in First Baptist Church in Key West, and eventually she did become a Christian. When I was attending the Southern Baptist Convention in Philadelphia several years ago, I had a direct flight from Philadelphia to Jacksonville, and was sitting with a group of my friends and was not too much aware of the other people on the plane. But when we landed in Jacksonville and began to make our way to the baggage area, I suddenly noticed that there was a young woman who was very distraught. And she looked like a foreigner, but when I began to talk to her, I realized that she had been born in Boston, Massachusetts, and had lived there most of her life, but she was of Portuguese background. This young woman had flown to Jacksonville, had expected to be met by her boyfriend, and when she got there, he was not there, and she was not able to make any kind of contact with him by telephone. It is not my custom to pick up strangers, but that night I felt that this was a young woman who needed a friend, and so I told her that she could come to my home and spend the night, and I would see what we could do the next morning in trying to locate someone who could help her. And during our hours together, as she recognized her own human limitations, and as I helped her to understand about who Jesus was and what He could mean in her life, she became a Christian as a result of that experience. I realize also that I ought to be involved in Mission Action through WMU, but I wasn't ever in town when my group met. I was always somewhere else doing the work of state WMU leadership. But I realized that there were many opportunities in Jacksonville and now in Birmingham when I could do something that was not planned through Baptist Women. One day I got back into town and I picked up the afternoon paper and turned to look to see what Tilly has to say. Tell Tilly is a column in our afternoon paper, and the idea is that if you have a problem, you tell Tilly and she tells the whole world. And perhaps somebody out there will be able to help you solve your problem. On this particular afternoon, as I read Tell Tilly, I discovered that there was a man who had just been released from the hospital. He had bleeding ulcers. He was on welfare. He did not have money to buy the kind of food that he needed, and Tilly wanted people to take baby food to him. Well, I never have bought a jar of baby food in my life, but I thought I might be able to, I at least knew where it was located in the grocery store, and so I decided that this was something that I could do that afternoon. I got in my car, went to the grocery store, and surely enough, there was baby food, and I bought a carton of it. I made my way over to the west side of town, and found the mobile home where the man was supposed to live. As I knocked on the door and was invited in by a little boy who I learned was 12 years old but looked more like he was 8 or 9, I realized that I was far beyond my depth in this particular area. This man had been deserted by his wife, and he was there alone, very ill, with a young boy, a son, who was very undernourished and who very much needed care and love. I realized that there was so much that I could not do. I could have cleaned the trailer and I could have done some of the things, but I realized that very near that trailer was a Baptist church, and I knew the WMU leaders in that church, and I realized that they had a very strong, active Women's Missionary Union program, and through Mission Action, they were reaching out into their community to reach these people who were hard to reach and who had been overlooked in the ordinary activities of the church. And so I went by the church, talked with the pastor. He put me in touch with the Mission Action chairman of Baptist Women, and just almost immediately, the entire Mission Action work or organization of that church moved behind this man and his son, and their lives were transformed. The little boy was given some clothes. On Sunday morning, the bus picked him up and took him to Sunday school, and eventually, the entire church had become a family for this man and his son. It was then that I learned that most of the time, we can't do it by ourselves, that most of the time, it takes all of us working together to demonstrate the love and concern that the Lord has for His people. Just recently, I was flying to an engagement, and I was trying to read a book that I was going to talk about when I got to the engagement, and I was very obviously turning a cold shoulder to anybody else who got on the plane. But this older man, who later I learned was 75 years old, kept nudging me and kept trying to say something to me. So finally, I just closed the book and listened to him. He is a man who has grown to the age of 75, a very successful businessman. But as I talked with him, I learned that he had not become a Christian, that he never had time in his life for church activities. He said to me when I tried to talk with him, when I tried my 59-minute second testimony, he said, "I'm too old for that." He said, "I'm living now on borrowed time, and I don't have time for God, and I'm sure that by now He doesn't have time for me." And I said, "That means all the more that you need today to recognize that He loves you, that He died for you, that He has something to say to you." We talked and talked and talked, and I found that he was a nursery worker, and I said, "Well, you know, we're kind of in the same business. You say that you are propagating seed, and I'm trying to do the same thing," and we began to talk from this point. I was not able to bring him to the point of commitment, but since that time, he and I have been carrying on a lively correspondence, and I do believe that sometime somebody in Lafayette, Illinois, is going to be used of the Lord to lead this man to a commitment of his life. I was visiting for my Sunday school class recently in a high-rise condominium. We got into the front door. The woman we were supposed to visit was not home, and so the man at the desk very rudely told us that we just had to leave, that the woman was not expecting us, that people moved there in order to be protected from the outside world, and it was time for us to leave. But the woman who was with me, who is a tennis player and whose whole life besides the Lord is tennis, suddenly realized that here was a man who also was a tennis player. His name Henry was printed on his shirt, and so she said to him, "Henry, do you play tennis?" And so a conversation developed, and we learned that Henry was a man from Germany who, after World War II, in which he had lost his two sons, and later his wife had died, he said, from a broken heart. Henry, who is 76 years old, had so isolated himself from the world and from any kind of expression of love that he was a very embittered old man. As Liz talked with him that night, we seemed not to make any kind of impression at all on him. And so we left and made our other visits, and we kept saying, "There ought to be something else we can do about Henry." And the love that we had experienced in our own lives. We were not able that night to penetrate the barrier around Henry's heart, but he's coming, and eventually he will come to know the Lord as his Savior. He did take a copy of Good News for Modern Men with the comment, "This doesn't look like any Bible I've ever seen before." And we told him that it wasn't, that it really was being given to him with the prayer that through it the Lord would speak to his heart. Shortly before I left Jacksonville to move to Birmingham, I had an experience that I want to share in closing, because it's just another example of how the Lord answers our prayers. And Jacksonville is a port city, even though it's 18 miles from the Atlantic Ocean, because St. John's River winds itself around into the heart of the city. I was working late in the office one night and suddenly realized it was almost 9 o'clock, and it is now too. And at that time, the security guard would go off duty. I cleared off my desk and rode the elevator down to first floor, signed out with the guard, unlocked the front door, and turned to lock it behind me. Then when I turned to move toward I reached for the paper in his hand, and it was a white paper napkin on which were written three words, "Southside Generating Station." Without saying a word, because he had not spoken, I pointed in the distance. And then he spoke to say, "But I've been there. My ship isn't there. Will you help me find my ship?" Well, I had no idea how to look for a lost ship. And besides that, I thought about all those things my mother had taught me about strange men at night. And I wondered how I possibly could help this young man. But I realized also that this was another example, perhaps, of the prayer that the Lord had answered for me. And so I said, "If you'll get in my car, I'll see if I can help you." Well, evidently, his mother had taught him about strange women, because he didn't want to get in the car with me. But we... And I realized there, you know, so many times I've said to myself, "Carolyn, if you'd just go, if you wouldn't be lazy or indifferent, if you'd just go, they'd be waiting to hear your message." But of course that isn't true. We have to break down the barriers that surround the hearts of people. Well, we overcame our barriers, and he got in the car, and I began to drive toward the generating station. I asked him where he was from, and he said he was from Pakistan. I said, "Wonderful, I have friends in Faridpur." He said, "No, that's East Pakistan. I am from West Pakistan. I am from Karachi." Well, that ended that story, because I didn't know any missionaries in West Pakistan. But we began to talk about the experiences that he had had that day in Christian America. One of the things that he had done was to go into a jewelry store. His sister had asked him to bring her a wristwatch from America. He selected the watch, paid for it, and when he reached for his watch, the watch was gone. He was not able to make the man understand him, or he would not understand him, and all that he knew was his money was gone, and so was the watch. This was typical of the kind of thing that had happened to this foreigner in Christian America that day. Well, we got to the generating station, and here was the fence, and way over there was the building, and I didn't see a ship either. So we began to drive slowly along Miami Avenue to see if there would be somebody who could help us. I saw a man on duty in a guardhouse, and I stopped and told him our story. He looked off in the distance, and he said, "There is a ship there. Did you go to the gate?" I said, "I didn't see the gate. How do you get to the gate?" And he gave me directions for finding the way to the gate. as I approached the gate, the young man began to smile, and he said, "This is it. This is where my ship is." I told this man on duty our story, and I asked if I could take the young man on into the ship or if I needed to let him out there at the gate. The guard said, "Take him on in. He's had enough trouble today." So he opened the gate back, and we drove in. I wondered how I could do anything, say anything, that this young man could understand. If he had spoken in his language, I would not have understood a word that he said, and he was having a rather hard time understanding what I said. But he opened the door himself by saying, "Why did you help me? So many people I saw today, why did you help me?" And so I simply asked, "Do you know the word Christian?" He began to smile and he said, "I am a Christian. I am a Christian." And I learned that indeed he was a Christian, that through American missionaries he had heard the story of Jesus, and for some 8 or 9 years he had been a practicing Christian. Well, we just sort of rejoiced in the Lord together, and he got out of the car and boarded the ship, and I turned to make my way back out the gate. As I got to the gate this time, the guard came out of the guardhouse to my side of the car and stopped me. He said, "Lady, I want to ask you something. So many of these foreign sailors get lost every day. They can't find their way back, and nobody ever stops to help them. Why did you, a woman alone at night, stop to help this sailor?" And so for the second time that night, I said, "Do you know the word Christian?" He said, "Yes, I know the word, but it doesn't mean anything to me." And I said, "Would you let me tell you what it means to me?" And so very simply, I gave him my testimony and tried to help him to see how Christ indeed loved him and died for him and wanted to be his Savior. You know, he understood every word I said. He too spoke Florida English. And as I drove away from that experience, I, who am not a shouting Baptist, felt like shouting, because I said, "Lord, you've just closed the circle for me tonight. You have shown me the meaning, really, of missions and evangelism." Because all of my life, on Sunday morning, as we put our money in our church envelopes, my mother and daddy helped us to understand what that money was going to do as it made its way around the world, as it helped people to know that Jesus loved them. As I grew older, I learned to pray for missions and missionaries. I studied about the work that missionaries do as they go around the world. But the Lord reminded me that night that there's no way that we can pray enough, nor that we can give enough money, that we can fulfill the responsibility that is ours every day as we confront people right where we live with the good news of salvation.